Shockingly, we're back for another day.
From what?
It's the interesting thing, you know, we're doing this. We are not in any jeopardy of being fired, which is an intriguing thought.
Well, lack of interest might help. But,
well, I don't, we could quit.
Although they, yeah. Well,
but we're not, nobody's going to fire us.
If we quit, would anybody notice?
Well, that's a good question. we'd have to make it.
The tree falls. Well, the tree falls. This
yeah, and there's nobody there. It doesn't make a sound. Yes, I know. We've heard that one before. Here's a guy who we have on intermittently and always enjoy our conversations. He's the president and general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. Ken Holland will join us today, just a couple days after the Duncan Keith trade. And as he prepares for the draft and well, the entry draft and the expansion draft.
Some free agents. He's got some free agents to worry about.
Yeah, he's got a bunch of stuff to worry about. We'll talk about all of that stuff and more. Ken Holland, this time on the program after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon once again. And our friend Ken Holland joins us from parts unknown, not in Edmonton. We won't reveal where you are, Mr. Holland, out of respect for your privacy. You guys had a GM's meeting, earlier this week?
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Monday.
It's been
3 days in a row, and then a competition committee meeting yesterday.
So, I know there's a lot of Edmonton stuff that we want to delve into, and I'll let John do a lot of that. We got into a conversation a couple of days ago. It's not a new one. But it may have been something that came up in your GM's meetings, and that is the dramatic difference between the way playoff games are officiated and regular season games are officiated. And we can debate the relative merits of that decision because it's been ever thus. But I'll tell you what it does do for me. It impacts mostly on the most highly paid and generally speaking, most entertaining players in the game today, who are suddenly not given the freedom opportunity to show their skills and to perform. Let me start with this question. Did this topic come up at all?
Yes, it did. We discussed that at the competition committee meeting yesterday. And with Stephen Walken was on the line as well, or on the as part of the meeting.
All right. Well, let me ask you bluntly: what's your take on this issue? Do you think this is something that should be addressed?
Well, yes and no. I think first off, a big push here at the general manager's meeting at the competition committee meeting was on cross-checking and stricter standards. And trying to, get more of a specific areas that we would like to limit cross-checking. And I think all these things that we've tried to do at the league level over the last number of years, the hooking of the hands when somebody's got the puck and they have a stricter standard there. Now we're trying to get a stricter standard on cross-checking. Obviously, over the last 10 to 15 years, a much stricter standard on at the supplemental discipline level, and more goes on. So we're changing the way the players play the game. But I do think forever and ever, come playoff time, there's always going to be less space. I think it's all the players on both teams understand the importance of the Stanley Cup playoffs. They back check harder. They finish checks. There's a little more physicality come playoff time. So I think that, yes, on one hand, that we want to do some things. And I think this cross checking will help, where you, people are standing around and you just come up and you cross check or you multiple cross check. Things like that will be eliminated from the game. But it's always going to be tough come playoff time for all players because of a greater commitment to team defense, more focus from the coaching staff. And you always hear the word, take their space away, take their space away, take their space away. I don't think that that's ever going to change. I think that's going to be part of the playoffs forever and ever.
Kenny, far be it from me to disagree with you, but I think the point I'm trying to make here is the officials put their whistles away during the playoffs. They call less. It is statistically a valid point. And it is it cross-checking? Yeah, that was one of the things that was happening over and over again during the playoffs this year. But it was hooking, it was holding, it was interference, it was all kinds of things that are penalties during the regular season that historically have not been called penalties during the playoffs. And I mean, I would think a team like yours would be as impacted as much as anybody else, given for no other reason, two of the highest skilled players in the game play for your team. And the opposition is given, provided liberties that they are not provided during an 82 game regular season. Your response?
Well, that question was posed to Stephen Wacom yesterday. And, you know, the direction to the officials, the on-ice officials, is the same as it is in the regular season. Do I think that they do, as you say, they put the whistles away? I think some days they do. I don't know if that happens on an every night basis. I think there's an element of, there's two things in play. Number one is what I said, a greater commitment to defense, a greater commitment to taking space away, a greater commitment to physicality by teams in the playoffs. And then combined with that is, does the referee standards, is there a little more allowed come playoff time? And probably so, because the stakes are greater. So I think we'd like to tighten it up, but I'm going to get back to you again. And reflecting back on my time in Detroit, and you reflect back on all these teams that win the championship, part of being a Stanley Cup champion is adjusting to the hockey that I've just talked about. It's harder hockey. It's harder hockey. It's less space, more physical, and certainly at times in games, would you like to see the standard tighter? Absolutely.
You know, for the longest time, even in the NHL referee's casebook, there was always a belief that you would allow a defensive player at least one good solid cross check, and then he would probably be called on the second. Do you think that will change, Kenny? Will there be more single calls or more cross checks called on single cross checks?
Well, I mean, we talked about cross checking, John. You know, cross checking obviously is probably arms extended. You know, you come from your body and you extend your arms, and then the amount of force that goes with that. So, you know, it's not an easy, you know, we got the general managers in advance of the general managers meetings got 40 clips to look at. And we were supposed to, you know, do we think it's a cross-checking penalty? Do we think it's not a penalty? And, or do we think it's an other penalty, you know, interference or something? And many of these examples, there was 50-50, you know, so I've had to look at it multiple times. I got to look at it slow motion. If I wasn't sure, I punched rewind. And at the end of the day, out of 32 general managers, you know, many of them are 52, 48, you know, or some of them. So, you know, there's these 1 minute penalties. I call them 1 minute penalties, and some nights a ref's going to call a 1 minute penalty a penalty, and some nights a ref's going to let those 1 minute penalties go. It's, you know, there's a whole bunch of players in the National Hockey League. They all don't have the same skill set and the same mindset. And I think it's probably, I'm assuming it's probably similar on referees. So, you know, those players, you know, again, there's certain situations, you know, if you cross-check somebody once, it might be a defensive play, but if you cross-check them multiple times, I'm not going to put a number on it because it depends that the force that goes with it. If it's just right, little wee pushes, and it's a fine line between a push and a cross-check, you know, you're probably going to get away with more. If you give two or three real good arm fully extended, you're going to go to the penalty box, where maybe last year you wouldn't have gone to the penalty box, especially on those scrums in the corners, you know, where you're trying to box somebody in and you see somebody cross-checking somebody multiple times to keep them in the box so that they can't get away. So I think that you know, it was a great exercise. Again, it's not a rule change. I think it's just a stricter. It's going to be called stricter. And I think ultimately it's going to be good for our game and good for the skill players, because you know, certainly we want the front of the net to be hard. Like, there's got to be an element of hardness to the game. It can't be just summer hockey where you float up and down the ice and nobody's back checking. You got all kind of space and it's a 3-on-2 game. I think fans like to see, you know, physical hockey and hard hockey and battles in the corner for the puck and battles in front of the net and good legal open ice body checks. I think that's an element of our game that the fans like, and I think the players like too. So it's a hard game to referee. The referees have to make those decisions in real time within a split second. And like I said, we show these examples and we're 50-50 and we're looking in slow motion, you know, multiple times. And we're still unsure. It speaks to how difficult it is to make these decisions in real time in a moment's notice.
I have the utmost respect for you. And I appreciate your sentiments on this. I think the general managers in this league are missing the point, and that is the perception on the part of the fan in general is that the referees put their whistles away and do not call the game in the playoffs the way they do in the regular season. It is as simple as that, and it isn't specifically cross-checking or any other specific penalty. And it's hard to understand when the game... I get everything you said, and everything you said is true. It's far more intense. It's far more committed. Defense is far more important during the playoffs. All of that is true. But there just seems to be no doubt that these referees, either instinctively or by design, don't call the games the way they do during the regular season. Now, if that's okay with the general managers of the National Hockey League, who am I to argue? But from a fan's perspective,
I think we want penalties called. If there's a foul, we want a penalty call. So I mean, I think that that's the, and again, you know, I watched the playoffs like you did. You know, there were some nights this year, some games in the playoffs that I thought the standard was not tight enough. But I thought many nights the referees did a good job. So, you know, certainly we want to have a good job on an every night basis. And I'm sure that that's ultimately what we as a league are striving for.
Well, one thing we can't argue about is the fact that repeatedly players, when asked about this during the course of the playoffs for many years, but certainly this year, used a phrase, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's hard to know what you can and can't do, because the players perceive that the game is called differently and they don't know what is legal and what is illegal, what's going to be called and what isn't going to be called. And if the players don't know, I don't know how those of us sitting at home watching can figure it out. In any event, that aside, because you know, I understand this is, you are one of 30 guys sitting in a room, 32 sitting in a room, trying to assess all this, and the onus does not fall on you alone. It's just a conundrum that I have never been able to in 40 years get a straight answer to. Let's talk a little bit about the move you made just a few days ago, the Duncan Keith acquisition. You came out fairly strongly when there was, and inevitably there is going to be, controversy over any trade. Give me your thought process in this acquisition of a player who is, you know, not a young player. Should we assume it speaks only to a win now philosophy that you have?
Well, obviously when you look at the core of our team, Bob, I mean, we have to be in a win now mentality. Connor's 24, Leon's 25, Darnell's 26, Nuge is 28, we all want to have more success. So you know, I think that I made the decision on, you know, over the course of a night or two. It really went on for probably, I don't know, maybe almost 3 weeks, since, you know, middle to late June, when Stan Bowman called me to tell me that Duncan Keith was requesting a trade to go out west. And, you know, we were a team that Duncan was very interested in. I ended up talking to all the people in my organization, Dave Tippett, Jim Playfair, you know, my coaching staff, Ken Hitchcock. We had our pro scouting meetings, actually just right about that point in time. We were all together. We were talking about what we wanted to do with our team. I you know, early June, I'd been having my exit interviews with every player, you know, on the younger players and the exit interviews. I tell them the things that they need to, that we're looking for them to do before we go to camp. The veteran players, I listen. They tell me what they think about the team, and they give me their perspective and the things that they think that need to happen. So based upon, you know, gathering information from our leadership group, the players on the ice, Ken Hitchcock, Dave Tippett, Jim Playfair, the analytics, the guys that we've got, Justin Mahi, that does the analytics, Archie Henderson and his pro scouts, Keith Gretzky. And ultimately, I have to make a decision after going through that whole process. You know, like I said, it's almost probably a 3-week process. Mm-hmm. I made a decision to do the deal that we did.
One more quick one, John.
Keith's impact.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Wanted to, on that point, and you come back to Gretzky. How much of this would you say of your decision to make this move was Duncan Keith's ability to play at age 38, and how much of it is Duncan Keith's presence on the ice and in the room for your team? Which, you know, on one hand, you could say you're ready to win. On the other hand, you could say, well, you can always use somebody who knows how to win and who has done it.
See, I don't think personally it's one, it's just look at analytics and that, oh shoot.
No, you're okay.
Sorry, I lost you.
No, you're coming.
I don't think it's just look at analytics. Like, to me, it's an all encompassing package. Certainly the most important is what we feel Duncan Keith can do on the ice. That's number one.
Okay.
And I think his role is going to be a little bit different in Edmonton than it was in Chicago, because of Darnell Nurse. Obviously, we've got a left shot defenseman that's in the prime of his career that eats up the most, is going to take up the biggest responsibility and eats up the most minutes. So Duncan Keith is going to have a secondary role and not a primary role. Then you factor in, and I can't put, nobody can put numbers are on the impact that Duncan Keith, a veteran player, has to the rest of your team, not only to the players that he's playing with, his you know, his role in the locker room. You know, I watched Mike Smith, his relationship with the young core, spending time with him, a veteran, you know, a 39-year-old veteran goaltender. You know, I think, you know, I look this year, and you look at Montreal Canadiens going to the Stanley Cup Finals, and you know, Shea Weber at the age of, what is he, 35 or 36? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the impact that veteran players can have. And then I reflect back on my time in Detroit, and I understand it's a new world, you know, and that's old news. But the impact that older veteran players had on our team in Detroit and helping us have success through all that information, through my own experiences, through my, you know, my gut instinct, through not only our own information, talking to other people around the league. I I talked to some people that had played, you know, with Duncan Keith. I know Dave Tippett talked to some people. Ken Hitchcock talked to some people. When we gathered all that information, when I gathered all that information, I felt that, and then I went to work with Stan Bowman. And if you look at, you know, obviously, you know, Caleb Jones is a young defenseman that's, you know, 23, 24 years of age. He's still trying to get into the lineup full time in Edmonton. And we've got, you know, we have a left shot defenseman, Broberg, who's 19 year old, who's top prospect. And we've got Samarukov, who's a young prospect. And Darnell Nurse is 26. And Bouchard, a young defenseman on the right side, is 21 or 22. And Ethan Bear is 21 or 22. So certainly we have a lot of younger defensemen. And you add a third round pick to that. So I make the trade to acquire Duncan Keith. And, you know, obviously I think a lot of the debate, you know, after you make, that's the beauty of our sport, is any sport, is that people, fans, get to decide if you've done a good thing or you've done a bad thing. You know, certainly taking on all the cap, I understand it's a bigger cap number, but if he comes in and plays to the level that I believe he can play as a second pair defenseman, and impact our team in a positive way in the locker room, provide leadership. And also, if the move has our players believe that we are, you know, our legitimate playoff team again, and we're trying to make some noise, then it's going to be a great trade. Obviously, if Duncan Keith, it's like anything, if a player, doesn't matter if the guy's 37 or 27, if they don't play to the level that you pay him at, it's a bad contract. It doesn't matter what age the player is at. But Duncan Keith is a guy he's 37. He's committed to fitness. He's very serious about his business. He's respected in the locker room. Last year he was the number one defenseman in minutes played, a time on ice for the Chicago Blackhawks. They were in a playoff race up until probably the last 10 or 15 games, and then they fell out of it. It's not like they were, you know, they were way out of the race, and but they were in the race. So when I factor in, I take in all that information, I eventually decided to make the deal.
With the cap hit that's over $5 million, how confident are you that it doesn't handcuff you trying to do other things this summer?
Well, first off, John, I believe he's going to play in a top four. If you don't have Duncan Keith, I'm going to have to pay four in the fours to get a top four defenseman. They don't play for $1 million, you know. Right. So if you don't have Duncan Keith, I've got to take $4.5 million to market and go get another top four defenseman. So that's what top four defensemen make. They make four plus. If you're a legitimate top four defenseman, you make four plus. So if I don't have Duncan Keith, I got $5.5 million, but I got to go fill a top four spot, and $4 to $5 million anyway is going into that spot. Now I factor in, you know, his resume and his leadership skills and what kind of an impact can he have on the other players on the team. You know, factor into the decision. Do I have money left over? Yeah, but the reality is, John, in a cap world, you know, you the money goes fast. The money goes fast. I mean, it's 81.5, but you have a few high priced players, and then you gotta have lots of cheaper players on the bottom part of your roster to fill out your team. So, do I have some money? Yeah, but if I didn't have Duncan Keith, I'd have a top four spot open, and I'd have to use the money and go out and get a top four defenseman. That in my opinion, they're in the four. If you're paying a top four defenseman in the ones and the twos, you're probably getting what you pay for. Duncan Keith again was the number one defenseman of the Chicago Blackhawks. I don't have to talk about what his resume is. I know he's 37. I had a lot of success in Detroit with older players. I look at the Montreal Canadiens and the impact that some of those older players had. They know how to play. They know how to play. And Duncan Keith is a veteran. He's got savvy. He's got poise. And I believe he's going to come. I know he's motivated. He's going to come in. And I believe he's going to have a real positive impact on our team.
John, I know you got more. So do I. We'll take a quick break and come back with Kenny Holland after these messages. Bob McCown, it's John Shannon. Ken Holland is with us. John, I'll let you jump back in here because I know you had some other things you wanted to say.
Well, just so what does that do for, I mean, I know Oiler fans are apoplectic all the time, Kenny, so don't worry about it. But what does that do to Adam Larson and to Tyson Berry?
Well, right now, Adam Larson's deciding what he wants to do with his future. You know, I don't believe it's money related. I think he just is going through a process to decide if he would like to re-sign with Edmonton or if he wants to go to the open market. So certainly that's in my mind. And I think that, you know, on Tyson Berry, I've had a couple of conversations with his agent, Pat Brisson. The dilemma a little bit, I think the hometown dilemma is, we feel we've got a really good young defenseman in Evan Bouchard. Right. And if I re-sign Tyson Berry, then the real and you re-sign, you know, if it was Berry and Larson coming back, for sure one of those young kids then has to be, there's no playing time. Somebody's got to go. So I think that you know, Bouchard is a guy that provided a ton of offense in junior hockey. He's the 10th overall pick in the draft. He scored 40 points thereabouts as a freshman, a first year player in the American Hockey League. So, you know, if I'm going to sign up Tyson Berry long term, obviously that's going to have an impact on the potential for Tevin Bouchard. So those are all the things that are factors that were right. Considerations as we make these moves.
And Oscar Klefbom, any word on what's going to happen there? Do you think he's going to come back and play?
I would say to you, he's definitely not playing hockey in 21-22. Wow. We had a Zoom call on Monday with Clef, Dr. Naidu, our team doctor, and TD Force, our head athletic trainer. And last week, Dr. Naidu talked to Dr. Miniacci in Minneapolis, who performed the shoulder surgery on Clef. And basically, you know, his rehab is going to go probably till late September, 6 months, which is late September, around October the 1st. He hasn't done any training really whatsoever since about September. He was in pain in September through January, and he went through the process to decide to eventually have the surgery. You know, so you're going to be talking about come September, October, a professional athlete that's coming off of a major shoulder surgery and hasn't trained for a year. So I think the reality is it's probably 3, 4, 5 months of hard rehab and training before he could even get to the point to decide if he can or wants to play hockey again. So you're basically running off the 21-22 season, and he needs to decide if he wants to come back and play for the 22-23 season.
Yeah, the shoulder injury is a tough one because you're constantly exposed to the potential of re-injuring it. And my understanding is, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the procedure that he had offers no guarantee of 100% recovery, does it?
No, it was a radical surgery that was done. You know, his shoulder had a was beat up, and it's been really, you know, it's been something that he's been battling since he's been 18 or 19. I think he separated his shoulder in his draft year, and right. You know, he's played in a lot of pain over the last few years. I think he had to take, you know, painkillers on a regular basis. He decided he didn't want to live like that anymore. I mean, he made it very clear that you know, he's been over the last couple of months, he's been able to sleep, you know, he's been able to, you know, sleep on that shoulder for the first time in probably years. And he's not living in day-to-day pain. And his, you know, I think the first order of everybody, you know, you're going to want to be able to live the rest of your life, you know, pain-free. So that's the first order of business for Clef. And then somewhere down the road in the next, you know, 6 to 9 months, I think he has to decide if he wants to be all in to hit the gym every day and go through that process to try to get himself ready to play hockey for the 22-23 season. But that's down the road,
yeah,
a ways.
Right. So the 17th of July is when you have to put your list in for the expansion draft. How has this exercise and what the process has been in trying to deal with Ron Francis as opposed to dealing 4 or 5 years ago with Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee?
Well, I was fortunate in Detroit that we basically had the 7-3-1, John, and they ended up Vegas picked Thomas Nosek, who's been a really good, you know, I think bottom six fourth line player for Vegas. But it was, you know, I didn't have to pay assets, and we submitted our list, and it's the same go around here. On Saturday we submit our list. We're going to submit a 7-3-1 list: 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goalie. And then we're going to lose somebody. So we'll let them, Ron Francis, decide which player he wants to take off of us. And then we'll go forward.
Are you inclined to have a conversation with Mr. Francis and try and negotiate something that would allow you to, in some way, shape or form, protect an additional player? Or are you committed to the 7-3-1 and that's that?
Yeah, that's that. I mean, I feel comfortable at the 7-3-1. We're going to protect the players that we want to protect, and everybody loses a player, so I'm comfortable that with the player we lose, that we can afford to lose, but we have to lose a player, and I'm comfortable that the players that we want to protect, we will be able to protect. Ron Francis can pick a player, and then we'll get back to business.
So the other aspect of your hockey club is, what are you going to do about your goaltending? Dylan Wells, you traded to Carolina, but I'm not suggesting he was going to be your answer next year anyway. But where do you consider where your goaltending is right now?
Well, I've been in, first off, I would say to you, and I've been here now for 2 years, and, I think that over the 2 years, our goaltending has been very solid. I think that, certainly probably in the bubble against Chicago in the playoffs, our goaltenders didn't play as well. But over the 2 seasons, I think Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen have given us good goaltending. Now, I think the concern is one's 39 and one's 33. So I am having conversations about Mike Smith coming back. He had a great year.
He did.
And again,
he should have been a Vezina finalist, Kenny. He should have been a Vezina finalist.
Yeah. Not only did he have a great year, his ability to handle the puck, I think he might be the best puck handling goaltender in the National Hockey League. And then you factor in his leadership skills, and he's just, he's a role model, and he's been around the game for a long time. He's 39 years of age. He's got a real positive impact on our team. So I am talking to Mike Smith about trying to find a solution to bring him back.
Only a couple of more minutes, and we wanted to talk very briefly, at least, about where you think we are at in terms of Beijing and the Olympics. I know that you have a role in this process, although not the decision-making role. Should the NHL be going?
Well, that's not my decision to make, Bob. I think, I'm as part of the general I'm part of the management team of Team Canada. Doug Armstrong is the general manager. We've been having regular meetings over the last month. Since the start of the season, since the middle of January, every month we have a meeting to go over players. So, if NHL players are going, we're ready. We've been evaluating players. We've been having meetings. We've been talking about philosophy. But in terms of whether we should go or we shouldn't go, that's above my pay grade. I think I understand the reasons why we shouldn't go, and I understand the reasons why it makes great sense to go. I know that the players love to go. It's a great tournament. I'm fortunate enough to have been there in 2010 in Vancouver and 2014. It's best on best for 2 weeks. It's great for fans to watch the tournament with the greatest players in our sport representing their countries. But certainly I understand there's a business component to this decision. And as we all know, whether you, the job that you guys are doing, the job that I'm doing, business is going to make decisions as to a lot of times as to what you do and you don't do, because economics is why you guys are doing what you're doing and I'm doing what I'm doing. But certainly if we go, I mean, it's a fabulous tournament, but certainly if we do not go, I certainly understand why, but it's not my decision to make.
Anything else from you, Mr. Shannon?
No, I think we covered it all. When you consider that if we mention players on other teams before the 28th of July, Kenny gets $1 million fine for tampering.
So. Well, we don't want that to happen.
No, well, it's chump change for Holland, but that's another story for another day.
Yeah, it was the money you guys are paying me for this show. I mean, I'll put that towards the fine.
All right. We just conceded we're not going to get you in trouble. You don't have to get bitter about your fee now. You know where we greatly appreciate the time you afford us.
I love you guys. Yeah, you guys do a great job. Appreciate your passion.
We thank you, and we have a safe rest of the summer. And I know you got lots to do too. So before September rolls
next,
around,
then big month. The next 2-3 weeks, big month for everybody in our sport, and then kind of downtime in August, and then back out in September.
We'll bug you somewhere down the road if we can.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Holland.
Take care. Thanks. Bye.
Ken Holland back after these messages. So our thanks to Kenny Holland for joining us, the president, general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. Well, you're smiling. Why are you smiling?
Oh, I Ken's one of those guys, and I've known Ken, gosh, a long time. I love having conversations with him because he makes you think, and he also tries to give you a background on an explanation of why he did things. And how things are supposed to proceed. And, you know, he's one of those guys, as the season goes on, Bob, if you sit beside him having a beer, he will have this full schedule in front of him and tell you exactly how many points he expects to make the playoffs. He keeps an eye on all of this stuff. He's, you know, his team was eliminated in 4 games, but I, as he mentioned, he watched the playoffs every night. He is fully committed to making the game better, not just for his own team, but for the NHL as a whole. And he's a pure hockey guy, and it's always fun to listen to pure hockey guys. He spent a lot of time with Scotty Bowman, and I don't know if you listen and hear it. I hear a little bit of Scotty Bowman in Ken Holland at times.
I hadn't thought about it. I'm not going to react off the top of my head. I'll have to think about it a little bit. I will say this. Look, I have the utmost respect for Ken Holland, and I wouldn't slag him in the least. But I really do not understand the defense of the officiating and the change in officiating that exists every year when the Stanley Cup playoffs come.
I think no sport's like it.
It doesn't happen anywhere else.
I think without saying it, I mean, and not putting words in his mouth, but I think the fact that he says that teams change the way they play, therefore officiating changes the way it works. I think that was pretty, if you read between the lines, I think there's, for the most part, an endorsement of what's gone on.
Officiating, I understand officiating is mostly gray, but this issue is black and white. You cannot make the argument that officials conduct themselves during playoff games the way they do during 82 regular season games. You just cannot make that argument. And it does not happen in any sport. This conversation does not happen at World Series time. It's Super Bowl time. Are there bad calls? Of course. Are there missed calls? Yeah. Yes. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a deliberate, conscious attempt to change the way the game is played, and it's done based on historic preference. It's been this way forever, therefore it's going to continue to be this way. And I think it's a bunch of poppycock, because what it does is it does impact the skilled players. I watch the playoffs because I want to see the best players in the world do the things that they do during 82 games, and they aren't allowed to. I don't care about the slugs grappling with each other. that's of really no consequence to me. But a penalty is a penalty, or it's not. And the fact that general managers look at a videotape, and as Kenny says, half of them think it was a penalty, half of them don't. What's the relevance?
I think it's from the league perspective is, hey, listen, it's just proving to them on a regular basis how difficult it is to make calls one time in real time.
Is it harder in the playoffs than it is during the regular season?
I think it is. And I think that's what Kenny was trying to say. No, I think Kenny was with the intensity of the game. I think it is more difficult. But the interesting thing is after the manager's meeting, the competition committee meeting is not just general managers. Members of the Players Association are there. And in addition to league people and a couple of managers, including Kenny. And I think that if it's the competition committee with the players' voices being heard saying, hey, listen, we got to be a better job of it, I fully expect that there will be an attempt to try to call it closer to what, you know, the printing in the rule book says. It's going to be hard because of that as you talk about the cultural human nature of reverting back to, well, that's how we've always done it in the playoffs. We'll just have to wait and see.
Until somebody from the league, Bettman, Daly, a couple of general managers stand up and say, yeah, it's different. Yeah, we do call it differently. And this is why we do it. Like, at least stand up and explain to me why you think this is a good idea. Because guess what? Two of the most exciting players in the National Hockey League play for the Edmonton Oilers. And they got extricated from the playoffs in four straight. And none of us got an opportunity to watch their skill set.
I'm not sure that I'm not sure it was because of officiating that they got eliminated.
I'm not saying that necessarily this happens over and over and over again. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, as the commissioner told Ron McLean, this is the ultimate team sport. It takes 20 players to win, not just one or two.
Well, that's a pile of crap too, because the same is true for the National Football League and the same is true in baseball.
I'm just telling you what the commissioner said.
No, you're not. You're trying to preach that there's something unique about this sport. It's no different than any other sport. Whether you got five people on the playing surface, six people, nine people, 11 people, however many you have out there, all of them have some level of import. And you don't win with one or two.
No doubt about that.
You win with a whole bunch. I get it, but it's the same everywhere.
Yep.
And they don't change the rules and the way the game is called.
Okay.
This league does.
Okay.
And I don't understand it. On that note, I'll take a pill and you have a nap. You look fatigued.
I think I look pretty good.
Yeah, would you like a second opinion? We'll come back with more tomorrow. Until then, a fond adieu. Goodbye, everybody.